Notice I am decidedly not Dusty. He is in Haiti this week with some of our men who have gone. I think there's five of them that went down there this week, and they are working and doing some construction project. Dusty is doing some preaching and teaching down there this week. So I am up here in his stead, and you'll see Shane Douglas, our very own Shane Douglas, sitting back there next week. He'll be up here delivering the message next week. I tried to make it easy for them back there, and I do not have a PowerPoint up there. But if you'd like to take notes, I will be saying some things, and I'll say, well, write this down. This is the part where you can do the notes. So I am so ADD sometimes that I can't follow my own notes, and I thought I'd make it easier for them back there. If I can't follow what I'm doing up here, there's no way she's gonna be able to follow me, so I figured I'd try to make this easy on them. But as I said, I'm guest speaking this week, and Shane will be next week. We'll have a couple of others. You'll see throughout the course of the next year or so. We decided at one point when Ryan and I came on as elders last year that the elders should probably be more involved with preaching. So don't be surprised someday if you walk in here and see Ryan up here or see Chuck up here. Also, Jay Henry will be coming in a few weeks. I think during the week of dinner theater, he'll be here delivering the message, so you'll see him. Right now, we are in the middle of a sermon series called Why Miami Town? Why Miami Town Church of Christ? Why do you attend here? Why do you, would you want to invite somebody here? Why are you here? And so we are smack dab in the middle of that five-week series, and Dusty started off with sound doctrine a couple weeks ago, and then last week talked about the environment that we have here. Today I'm going to speak a little bit about our children's ministry, because I have four kids that are in from 6 to 12 years old that are in that ministry. And then next week, as I said, Shane will be up here delivering, and he'll talk about the engaging and relevant sermons that are delivered up here on a regular basis, and then Dusty will be back following that, and then he'll be back for an extended period of time, so come and join him, and he'll be talking about our worship, and he'll be probably speaking a little bit with Logan and discussing what some of the things we do up here as well as during first service. But I would be remiss if I didn't start, when we're talking about the youth services, if I didn't start with where Miami Town affected me and how their youth services years ago got me to where I am today. I started out, didn't actually start out here at Miami Town Church of Christ. We lived out in Oldenburg between 229 and Pump House on Hickory Road, if you know that area out there, kind of far out in the middle of nowhere out there. And Mom always made sure that we went to church. She took us to church every week, whether we wanted to or not. She drug us along behind her and made us go. And I'm thankful for that now. At the time, you know, we're little kids and we're like, well, we got to go to church on Sunday. And but that started a pattern in my life of making sure that I attended church. And then we moved back here to this area, to the Harrison area, when I was in about seventh grade. So middle school at the time, I think it was called Harrison Junior School at the time. And so that's really when I got my start here at Miami Town Church of Christ. And I'm back from the era of Gary Angel and Rowdy Green and those guys, if you remember some of those guys and the fun and antics that we used to have when he was in the youth group. And we studied over in this little building, this little house here that was converted into our worship area where the high school met upstairs and the junior high met downstairs. And we would do all kinds of crazy stuff over there. And I enjoyed it. We had a great time over there. And that's where I got my start, really, with Miami Town Church of Christ. And I remember all the things that we used to do and going to church camp with Gary Angel and those guys and Reddy Kittle and Ken Boatwright and all those guys, if you remember them. And so that's that foundation. Even though I wasn't baptized at that time, I never had a really good reason not to do it. I just, for whatever reason, didn't. But even though that did not lead at that time to my baptism, they laid the foundation for me. The foundation that they put down, those seeds that they planted with me at that time when I started here in seventh grade, are really what stuck with me. Because I graduated in 93 and moved away. I moved up to Miami and then went out to Colorado for a couple of years and came back. And when I came back, those seeds were still there. Even though there were times through there during college years where I didn't attend church regularly like I should have, those foundations, those seeds that he planted were there. And so when we moved back here, Gary Angel, that youth minister I talked about, was actually the one who married Sherry and I right over here in the chapel. When we came back, and it was kind of like coming home. And that kind of leads to where I'm at today. When I came back here, I got involved, and I enjoy playing bass, and for a time we were going out to a church out in Brookville where we lived and played bass out there. So I come back here, and one of the first things I got involved in was with the worship group and playing here. And so it transpired from there, and it wasn't long before Don Souders, our children's director, recruited me to start helping with VBS. And so I got involved with VBS, and if you've known anything about our VBS programs here, they're a big production deal. So I got involved with that, and it led from that to, there were times when Jason Stark was here a few years ago where I led worship a couple times. Only a couple times, I noticed. Since Logan came, yeah, some of you are laughing. I know why you're laughing too, right? I'm really good over there. Not quite so good up here with a microphone when I got to stand there and sing. Matter of fact, I think the last time I sung here and led worship, I said, well, Jason's not here, so you get me. So you get two choices, either sing loud or you got to listen to me. And they sang really loud that morning. And that was the last time I was asked to lead too. So they do a great job. Logan does a great job. I'd fit a lot better over there, I think, leading worship than I do up here. But so I got involved there, and then finally last year, becoming an elder here at the church. But from a very young age, it was what Miamitown taught me that shaped me. It was what Miamitown taught me about being a Christian and the values and ultimately how to raise my children. And so now, I've got four children. 6 years old is my youngest, all the way up to 12 years old. And if any of you have taught them, and as I look around, some of you sitting right here right now are teaching them or have taught them now. Thank you. Bless you. Bless you. Trust me, they really are listening. Bless you. You have the patience of a saint, I promise, because I know how they are to deal with. I deal with them at home. But I thought, when I started preparing this, I thought, well, what better than to ask my kids what it is that they think is important about Miamitown Church of Christ. So I went through and I asked him, and Justin, of course, he's my oldest, and he's just now getting into the youth group as he turns 12 and goes into sixth grade. This is his first year transitioning from the children's ministry, really, to the youth group. And so he was really focused on the pursuit and the things they do Sunday night and how much he enjoys working with Dan and those guys down there. And so that was kind of his focus. He said, I love that group, and I love the older kids there and getting to do with that. And so then I talked to my youngest, my baby who's six, who's I guess not a baby anymore, but she's six, and she's probably getting, they grew up too quick. But she was enthralled with, she loves Dawn, our children's leader. She loves Dawn, and she wanted me to make sure I mention the snacks because she loves the snacks that she gets every week. She said, they're going to keep doing those, right? I'm like, well, I hope not, but yes. And of course, Kylie is my child who craves that positive attention. So she has kind of attached herself to the West family, and she loves Miss Lisa. And she could, when I asked her about that, she couldn't stop talking about Miss Lisa and really the whole West family, the girls, and how much she enjoys them because they give her that positive attention. And then I come to Ben, and Ben is my 10-year-old going on 25. Because you ever have a conversation with Ben, sometimes the words and the way he puts together his sentences, it's like, am I talking to a 10-year-old or a 20-year-old? And so I figured best that Ben will give me this, big, long, drawn out. He's like, everything. I'm like, well, you can't give me, no, just pick. He said, no, I can't. I said, everything, all of it. I like all of it. So I kind of pressed him a little bit, and he starts getting adamant with me. No. He said, I'm not going to pick one thing. I like all of it. So he would not pick one thing. But what I thought was interesting is what they don't talk about. And when I asked them that, they didn't talk about the Bible lessons they learn. They didn't talk about the programming or any of that stuff. but I realized that they're picking this stuff up because I don't do an organized Bible study with my kids every week or anything like that. We talk about it. We're one of those families that still sit around the dinner table at night, and so they'll ask me a question, and we'll talk then, or on the way to church, or on the way somewhere, they'll ask me a question, or Sherry a question, my wife, and we'll talk about it, and we'll just kind of have conversations about it. But in doing that, I hear them say things that I know Sherry and I haven't really said before. So some of us, where'd you hear that? Well, Miss Dawn said that, or I picked that up from Dan in youth group the other night, or I heard that in my Sunday school class. So believe me, when Ben's sitting there and his back's on the bottom of the chair and his butt's against the back and his legs are flopping over and his head's back like this, he really is listening, I promise. He really is picking some of that stuff up. So if you've taught him and you've seen him and you're like, man, I don't know how that kid picks up. Man, I swear, he really is picking things up. He really is. He's like a little sponge. He really picks that stuff up. As a matter of fact, both of the boys, Ben, he was the first one to be baptized several weeks ago. And I got a chance to baptize him here, and not to be outdone, Justin followed a few weeks later, and they had been talking about it for weeks and weeks before we did that. And that originated with conversations that they started in youth group or in Sunday school downstairs. So that really does have an impact. What you're doing has an impact. Now, my girls, they haven't been yet. If you're still teaching with them or working with them, keep on it. Because they're in those conversations now where the boys were, you know, a year or so ago. They're in those kind of beginning conversations. And a lot of that is stemming from what they're doing here in the morning, in the activities, in the evening for Justin with the older ones. But they have that kind of safe and secure feeling here. And of course, when you talk 2016, yes, we're talking security about, I mean, Dawn does a great job when we have big events of making sure that the children have armbands and that the parents have armbands and that's matched. We have the pagers that are downstairs of the nursery and you have to sign in and sign out so that make sure that the right kids get back to the right parents at the right times and that sort of thing in 2016. Yes, that's something you have to be concerned about. But really, more than that, I'm talking about just the feeling they get. What Dusty alluded to last week with the warm and friendly atmosphere coming from a background of education, in order for a kid to learn, a child to learn, they have to feel safe. And I'm not, like I said, I'm not talking necessarily about those security type measures. I'm talking about the atmosphere they're in. They have to feel safe in order to be able to ask questions. They have to know that they can ask a question or they can say the wrong thing and it's okay. That they'll be taught and they'll learn from it, and they walk in feeling comfortable. They walk in knowing that, yeah, this is a safe place that I can talk and I can grow and I can learn. And of course, they don't express it that way. But when they don't have that feeling, you can see this kind of shut off mentality that they get sometimes. So it's a safe place. And Dawn, our children's minister, and Dan both, Sean and Meyer both work really hard to make sure that that atmosphere is not by accident. It's intentional. They do it that way on purpose. Of course, there's programming that comes along with it and curriculum. Like I said, Dawn does VBS, and VBS kind of morphed this past year into a whole community-wide thing with a mega sports camp in Harrison and served several hundred students and children across our area this past summer. The events that they do, matter of fact, we're having what I spoke about earlier, the pitch-in that they're doing this afternoon after service here. The hands-free kind of thing, the finger food kind of thing. I got to make sure I tell my kids, make sure you wash your hand because you're not using utensils. So if you're going through the line, make sure you don't follow mine. we always come to the kitchen table, and I'm looking at my kids' hands. I'm like, did you wash your hand in the back of it? It's all grimy and dirty. And they go, yeah, see, look. And there's this one little clean spot right here on each hand where they went like this and rinsed it off. But no, they'll have utensils and stuff down there for the serving at least. So you don't have to worry about following them. But no kidding, if you see my kids, make sure they wash their hands because they're always a mess. But those kind of fun events are what draws them. We went snow tubing a few weeks ago, and that turned into kind of a church-wide event. The Superstart that the kids are going to. Three of my four are going to Superstart here March 4th and 5th. And so they're taking them to that. These things don't happen by accident. It's not just come in, you know, open book, make class. Of course, there's a curriculum that she uses, but Dawn and Dan both, they take meticulous care to make sure that what goes into our children's minds is what we want them to hear. To take great care that they're watching and they see and they hear what we're doing. She does this if you ever worked as a volunteer. Dawn has lots of volunteers. Dan has lots of volunteers with our youth group. And they take very, very careful care in working with those volunteers to make sure that those volunteers are well-trained and understand how to deal with our children and work with our children and the best way to get our children to learn. You know, the activities that my kids do, the younger ones, and then like I said, Justin's getting with the older group, and Dan does the pursuit every week on Sunday nights, and that's for 6th grade up through 12th grade, and he loves that. If he can't come to that, it bothers him. He wants to come here and be a part of that. My kids want to come here and be a part of that. A few weeks ago, we went to the Brookville United Methodist Church for Scout Sunday, because that's the building that houses out in Brookville the Boy Scouts and the Cub Scouts out there. And so every year they host a Scout Sunday, and they welcome all the Scouts, and the Scouts become a part of the service. And so we're sitting there a few weeks ago, and Riley, my 6 years old, she says, "Well, are we going to church?" I said, "Yeah," and we kind of explained what we were doing. And she said, no, I mean, are we going to church? I said, "Well, yeah, we're here, we're at church." There, she said, "No, are we going to church, our church?" And so she meant, are we coming? And when she enjoyed it, they had a good time. They had a dinner for the Boy Scouts afterward, and the Boy Scouts got to participate, and she liked it. But she missed here. She missed here. She missed her family here. And the youth ministries, they do so much for our children. The older ones, you've seen some of our young ladies up here talking about Holt International and the things that they do for that, and that is strictly student-led. That is led all by them, the CIY, the mission trip. They are going, one of the things in our bulletin right now talks about the mission trip for middle and high school students, where they're going to Grundy in March 11th through 13th, 6th through 12th grade. They're doing their own mission trip. And all of those things are very, very intentional. But I guess the question we have to ask is, why do we take so much time to do that? What is the value of a child? And of course, you can't put a price tag on it. I mean, you can't say they're worth X amount of dollars or this. But I was looking in CNN, like CNN Money, I think I saw one. In Huffington Post, I saw one. They did a thing of what it costs to raise a child from infant to 18 years old. And depending on which one you look at, it was somewhere between $245,000 to $255,000. Of course, adjusted for inflation, but to raise a child from birth to 18 years old, $250,000. And I'm starting to think, when I read that, and I'm going, okay, I've got 4 kids, that's a million. And I'm starting to look at it, it's like, my salary and Sherry's salary, 18 years minus the mortgage and the bill. Sherry, I'm not so sure about this. But certainly we don't measure it by that, right? And we measure it. Do we measure it by hugs and kisses? And how much of those we get? I mean, certainly that's valuable to us. You can't put a price tag on it. Every morning, my job in the morning, I go down to South Dearborn, and I have to leave a little bit earlier because I'm about 45 minutes away from home where I work, and so my job in the morning is really just to get the kids up and get them downstairs, and then Sherry takes care of all the rest of it. Thank you, I love you very much. She does a wonderful job with that, and I don't do it very well, but I get them down in the morning, and so I only see them for about 5 minutes, but in that 5 minutes, as I walk out the door, Justin's always, "Dad, you got your watch." For some reason, he is fixated on my watch. He wants to make sure I have it, which is great. I love it, because most of the time, I don't have it, because I forget everything. And so I'll get a hug from him, and I won't tell you that I get a kiss from him too. He's sixth grade now, and he's getting older, so he doesn't do that kind of stuff anymore. But from my youngest, my 6 year old, I always get a kiss and hug, and she always wrinkles her nose at me. She goes like that and gives me one of those every morning. How long is it going to be before that's not happening anymore? Not very. That's going to come across really quickly, and that's going to be gone. I read something one time that says, life is not measured by the number of breaths you take, but by the moments that take your breath away. If I knew who wrote that, I would give them credit, but honestly, I don't. If you can Google that, I'm sure that person is out there to give them the proper credit for that. But it fits with children, because you can't put a monetary value on that. But value of a child to a parent is one thing. What about the value of a child to our church? Jesus places a high value on the attitude of a child. Remember, I said there'll be some things that I'll tell you. If you're a note taker, write it down. This is one of them. Jesus places a high value on the attitude of a child. And this story is in more than one gospel. What I like, Mark expounds upon it a little bit. Mark 10:13 to 16. People were bringing little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them, but the disciples rebuked them. When Jesus saw this, he was indignant. He said to them, "Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of God belongs to such as these. Truly I tell you, anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God like a little child will never enter it." And he took the children in his arms and placed his hands on them and blessed them. Have you ever seen a little kid get something? And I'm not talking about, you know, 10, 12 years old kid. I'm talking about 3, 4 years old. Little. You ever seen them get a gift or get a present and just the joy that's on their face? I remember several years ago, I think Riley must have, she's 6 now, so she must have been 3 or 4. I can't remember how old she was, but it was Christmas time and she was opening a gift and we were, I think we were at mom and dad's. And honestly, I don't even remember what the gift was anymore. I couldn't tell you what they gave her, but she opens this thing and she's just got that big wide-eyed, you know, little kid expression. This is the coolest thing ever. This is my favorite. And Sherry and I are kind of sitting in the back. And so we can't really see what she's got. So Sherry's like, Riley, what'd you get? And she's like, I don't know, but it's my favorite thing ever. She had no idea what it was, but it was because it was of who had given it to her. It was important because of who gave it to her. How often do we receive our gift like that? How often do we have that attitude of joy in the gift that we're given? You know, imagine for a moment no kids running around here. And I know the first thing you're going to say is, boy, you'd be quieter. Because I know how mine are. You'll see my 4, I'm sure, running all over here afterward. Try the best you can to corral them, and it's kind of like herding cats. They just run everywhere. But imagine if it wasn't, if they weren't like that, if they weren't running around here. And there are some smaller community churches where you don't see very many children. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but where are we going to be in 15 years? If we don't have children now who are running around here doing that, what's the church going to look like in 15, 20 years? Those are our future. And not just the future of Miami Town Church of Christ, but they're the future of our church, capital C. Those seeds that were laid there to me from this church years ago, we are now in turn planting those in these little guys that are running all over the place. The responsibility that we have for that is huge. And that is even evident where the Bible talks about qualifications for different things. And one of them is, since I became an elder recently, the qualifications of an elder. Here's another one of those note things. How you manage your children is an indication of your qualification for leadership. The Bible says, how you manage your children is an indication of your qualifications for leadership. And we use 1 Timothy 3:2 all the time for qualifications for an elder or an overseer. Now, the overseer is to be above reproach, faithful to his wife, temperate, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not given to drunkenness, not violent but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. He must manage his own family well and see that his children obey him, and he must do so in a manner worthy of full respect. If anyone does not know how to manage his own family, how can he take care of God's church? That's a huge responsibility we're placed with. And that doesn't just go to my own children as a father, to my 4 children. That goes to all of us sitting here and all of the children who are there, whether they're down over in the nursery and infant 2 years old or sitting up here in our youth group. They're not just the responsibility they're of their parents or of the youth ministers or of the children's leaders. They're our responsibility. And honestly, that's a responsibility for a long time I didn't want. If you know me, it takes me a while to make decisions. As a matter of fact, it took me 9 years to ask my wife to marry her. And I'm thankful that she waited because I'd be lost without her right now. And I've gotten better at that over the years, thankfully. But that was a responsibility that I just didn't, I don't know if I didn't want, I was afraid of. So we got married and it didn't take long for my wife to do what most wives do. And she's like, she's holding little babies and her friends are having little babies. And she's like, well, do you think? And I'm like, well, how about a puppy? And it worked for a little while. So we had a puppy, and he was running around and playing stuff and doing things that puppies do. And it's not long before the puppy turns into a dog. And my wife's going, well, I think maybe it's time to... I'm like, how about a puppy? And so we had two dogs. And that worked again for a little while until she's, you know, and I can remember this. She's holding it. She's holding a little baby. One of her friends had just given birth, and she's holding this little infant, and she looks up at me, and she's like, and the first thing she said was, and if you get me another dog. So at that point, I had to get serious about, you know, talking about having children. But even after we had Justin, you know, Sherry is 3 months pregnant with our second son, Ben, and in this book that I'm going to write one day titled Things Not to Say to Your Pregnant Wife, she looks at me and she says, well, how many children do you think you'd like? And mind you, she's pregnant with our second child. And I'm like, one's good. Not a good thing to say to your pregnant wife. I can laugh about it now because she's back there smiling now. Yeah, the day of, it was not smiles. But it's because it's such a responsibility. Even when you have your first one, and you go to the hospital, and you know, the doctors are all there, and they're all taking care of everything, and the baby is born, and they take care of the child, and they take care of the mom and his dad. I'm just kind of sitting back here going, yeah, this is pretty cool. And then at the end of 2 days, they wrap the little baby up, and they put him in the car seat, and they go, here you go, bye. And I'm like, she can't keep a houseplant alive. The dogs are only alive because I can put food and water in their dish, and they'll survive for a day or so. Worst case scenario, they pee on the floor. That doesn't work with a little kid. Suddenly, you're responsible for this infant life. And there's no instruction manual. They don't come with a manual. And now I'm responsible. I've not had to take care of anything except myself, and largely that's why I got her. She takes care of me. So now I'm responsible for this little tiny infant life that's placed in my hands. And one of my friends knew... He's kind of a jokester like I am, and he knows me, so he gives me this manual, Instructions for Raising a Child. It's a thick little manual, but it kind of reads like stereo instructions or the IKEA, how to put furniture together. It's got the little pictures in it and the little picture do. And all of the do pictures are the pictures of the mom. And I noticed all of the don't pictures are the pictures of the male figure, the father. And so it's got a do, how to wake the baby up, and it has this little drawing of a mom waking the child up by patting it gently on the back. And over here on the don't side, it's got dad with an air horn. Don't. And then for walking the child, it's got a picture of mom with a little papoose, and it's all wrapped up in the front. Do. And then over here, with the dad, the backpack with the baby's head hanging out the bottom. Don't. Shopping with your child. You know, picture the baby wrapped up in the bass cart and sitting there on top and strapped in like they're supposed to be, too, across the top. And then over here on the don't section, the baby's legs are sticking out of the bottom of the bass cart with groceries all over top of him. Don't. That's the kind of stuff I need. But now I'm responsible for this. And not only now am I responsible for their physical needs and their emotional needs. You know, as I start studying, I find out that I'm responsible for their spiritual needs as well. And one more note for you to write down. Jesus places a burden on parents to raise their children up in him. Jesus places the burden on parents to raise their children up in him. Matthew 18, 1 through 6. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? He called a little child to them and placed him among them, and he said, truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. And then here's where it gets the part that always scares me. Verse 6, if anyone causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me, to stumble, it will be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. Now, of course, we use that verse a lot to talk about, as Christians, watching out for each other and making sure that one another doesn't stumble. But if you take a literal meaning of raising a child, it will be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea to cause one of these little ones to stumble. So I've got this little life that I'm responsible for his physical and his emotional well-being and his spiritual well-being. And as a new father, that was frightening. And honestly, it still is. But I also know that as part of a church, it's not just my responsibility. I mean, you might be sitting here today going, well, you know, I don't have children yet, or, you know, my children are grown and gone, or, you know, the people I'm thinking about, they don't have any children, or their children are grown and gone, so this really doesn't apply to me. No, I don't think so. Whether you're responsible for children's worship, whether you're one of the volunteers that hangs out downstairs and works with them every week, again, bless you, thank you for your patience as a parent. I can't tell you how much that means to me as a parent. Whether you're working with a youth group and a volunteer there and the older children, I know a lot of times our youth, they'll graduate and then they'll come back and they'll work with the youth group, or they'll come back and then work with the children. But what if you're just not involved in that side? You're involved in something else. You're involved in dinner theater, say, or you're involved in worship. So not directly influencing our children. Or perhaps you're new here. Our children watch everything. When I talk about Ben laying upside down on his chair, he's watching. He notices what goes on. You know, how often do we tell our children Ephesians 6:1, right? Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. I don't know how many times I've said that, right, Justin? Even it says in the Bible, obey your children. That's what it says right there in the Bible. Children, obey your parents. That's what it says. Ephesians 6:1, Colossians 3:20. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. In Colossians 3:20, children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. But then sometimes we forget about that very next verse in each one of those. Ephesians 6:4, fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training of instruction of the Lord. Colossians 3:21, the very next verse there. Fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged. And again, that of course goes to me as a father of four, but it's not just my responsibility for my own four. When I'm up here on stage and I'm doing this, or Logan's up here on stage, or we have people singing, VBS, anything like that, or even just sitting in the pews in the morning and listening and watching. Our children are like sponges. They soak all of that up. It goes back to the warm and friendly atmosphere that Dusty spoke of last week. Who notices that first? It'll be a child that notices that. They can walk into a room and they immediately get this sense of whether this is a warm and inviting place or whether it's not really someplace they want to be. They can pick that up really quick. And I think, as I've said before, Miamitown does a great job of that. My children love it here. They miss it when they're not here. But always keep that in the back of your mind. That's my charge to you. What are you modeling for our children?